hinterlands, but he is also not here.
I would be surprised if he was in the same hinterland.
I don't know. They seem like they would be divergent in hinterland
yes.
seeking. But we do have Mr. Jarrett Moore here to sit at the desk and run things and tell us what to do.
Yeah. Sorry, there's a whole lot going on right now. And yeah, now I'm hearing your voices, I'm hearing my own voice, and I'm hearing other voices. So we're just going to really take this as it comes.
Wow.
On radio, as in life, don't listen to the other voices.
Wow, that caused Professor X a lot of troubles when he was a teenager.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it did. Well, we do have, obviously, a couple of big movies this week, but one is more outsized than it normally would be because of its local connection, and that, of course, is The Fault in Our Stars, which, as you know, is based on the young adult novel by John Green, who was born here, then moved away, but to his credit, came back and has lived here, I think, ever since 2006 or so. So he presumably actually, I believe the book came out in 2009 or 10?
I don't know.
So presumably he actually wrote it here. And of course, the book is set in Indianapolis, features a lot of landmarks, you know, the IMA, the 100 acres, and
a recreation of part of the of one of the exhibits from 100 acres.
Yes. In the book, it's actually, you know, set at the real thing. But in the movie, unfortunately, they did not shoot it here. They shot it in Pittsburgh.
And the reason they did that is because Indiana has no organization to even try to woo filmmakers to film in this state.
Yeah,
that's how lame.
Do they not have no tax incentives? Because I actually wrote a story about this about 6 years ago for the Indianapolis Star about the tax incentives, which is they had just put some into place, but they were quite meager compared to other states, so they couldn't really compete. Have they just since lapsed and there's no tax credit? No film commission, no nothing.
I don't believe there's anything going on. I know we had a film commission once, and Jane, I don't remember her last name. She's passed, but she was part of it and was very aggressive, and really, you know, and got some movies here. But those days are long gone.
Yeah, I remember interviewing
along with cursive.
I remember interviewing, perhaps it was her successor or someone else, but someone had something like the title of, you know, film commissioner or person in charge of film for the state. And in interviewing her, it was quite clear that they really, you know, weren't doing anything to actually get film here.
No.
They had intentionally set the bar so low with the tax incentives that they knew no big productions would come, like Gran Torino shooting in Michigan or anything like that. So, you know, I felt like asking her, so what exactly is your job? You know, is your job to actually keep movies away from Indiana? it reminds me of back in the day, you know, Ed has heard this story about how, you know, I was living and working in a fairly small town in Florida called Ocala. And I won't bore you with the whole story, but the long and short of it was that John Travolta moved there. So John Travolta actually lives in Ocala, Florida, believe it or not. Mainly because he has a big airstrip so he can fly his jets in and out of there. But so I spent 2.5 years trying to get in, sit down and interview with John Travolta and never was successful. And I finally located his actual publicist. You know, the thing is, like, you can go online or whatever, look at the trade websites and say, like, here is so-and-so's agent, here and so-and-so's publicist.
Uh-huh.
But they don't actually do it. They don't really handle his media inquiries. And so I finally got a hold of him, and he told me about this long list that he has that includes, like, Newsweek and so on and so forth. And he'll add me to the bottom of the list, and maybe in 2 years they'll get to us, or never did get to me before I left town.
Wow.
And I realized that that man had an entire existence, a job description, presumably a nice paycheck, built around not doing the thing in the title of his job. So his job was to actually keep media away from John Travolta. And I've obviously gone rather far afield from The Fault in Our Stars. So you had what I thought was a really lovely, I don't even want to call it a film review, more like an essay, a poem, a rumination about the movie. And why don't you just talk about that?
It affected me. It took me places. And I decided that given that the film was, and the book and the film was aimed at a young audience, predominantly teenage girls, and certainly not at somebody my age, that rather than try to dissect the film, the smart thing to do would be to just talk about what happened when I watched it. And so that's what I did. Every word in there is exactly what happened when I was watching the film. Obviously, there were other things that happened as well, but these were the things that I thought were appropriate.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, aren't familiar, the book is hugely popular, New York Times bestseller, and so on and so forth. Very popular with that particular demo. But it's about two teenagers, both with terminal cancer, who fall in love kind of unexpectedly from her end. I think from his end, you know, he's this outsized character. His name is Augustus Waters, and he's this big, charming, bragging but in a good way sort of guy. And her name
is
making
himself larger than life. Yeah, and her, very hard.
And her name is Hazel Grace, as he calls her.
Yes,
and she is much more inward. Doesn't really want to put herself out there, mainly because she knows she's going to die, and she feels like she's a grenade, in her word, and she wants to do as little collateral damage to those around her before she leaves this mortal coil.
Now, there's a lot of comedy in the film, and it fits. I mean, it's not forced. There's a lot of romance. Hazel is determined to not be a cliche. She doesn't want to be the character you'd see in a movie about kids with cancer. You know, she doesn't want to fall into any of that, and she struggles to be independent. And of course, the movie does indeed fall into some of those patterns. She talks about derisively about the scene from Say Anything where Peter Gabriel or where John Cusack holds the boombox up playing the Peter Gabriel song In Your Eyes, and the film does the same thing, only just with different musicians. But that's okay because it's not Hazel doing that; it's the film.
Yeah, this is trying to be sort of the no BS version of a tragic love story. Really showing you how low the bottom can be. And I think it mostly accomplishes that. There's still a little bit of stuff in there, but starring Shailene Woodley, you probably know her from The Descendants and Divergent, kind of really one of the...
She's one of the daughters in The Descendants.
Yeah, one of the big up-and-coming actresses out there. And Ansel Elgort.
Who played her brother in
Divergent.
Divergent.
Yeah, plays Augustus Waters. And so why don't we take a little listen to The Fault in Our Stars.
I believe we have a choice in this world about how to tell sad stories. On the one hand, you can sugarcoat it. When nothing is too messed up that can't be fixed with the Peter Gabriel song. I like that version as much as the next girl does. It's just not the truth. This is the truth.
Hey, make some friends.
Sorry.
My bad. I'm Augustus Waters. I've been in remission for about a year and a half.
Maybe you'd like to share some of your fears with the group.
My fears? Oblivion. What's your name?
Hazel.
What's your full name?
Hazel Grace Lancaster. Why are you staring at me?
Because you're beautiful. So, what's your story?
I was diagnosed when I was 13.
No, no.
Your real story.
Quite unextraordinary.
I reject that at a hand.
You know, Gus talks about you all the time.
We're just friends.
I hope you realize you're trying to keep your distance from me in no way lessens my affection for you.
Gus, I'm a grenade. One day I'm gonna blow up, and I'm gonna obliterate everything in my wake, and I don't want to hurt you.
You don't get to choose if you get hurt in this world, but you do have a say in who hurts you.
I am in love with you, Hazel Grace. And I know that love is just a shout into the void and that oblivion is inevitable. And I am in love with you. All your efforts to keep me from you are going to fail. That's what you want. You need to break something.
You gave me a forever with the numbered days, and I can't tell you how thankful I am for our little infinity.
It's a good life, Hazel Grace. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And you can obviously hear there that Augustus Waters is not a wallflower type of guy. He's very much out there. Tells everybody that he expects to live an extraordinary life, which yes. If you say that, that happens in a room full of a support group for young cancer patients. That's a pretty out there thing to say. But even though he is kind of, you know, full of braggadocio, I don't think he ever comes really across as negative or mean-spirited or selfish.
No, it's just his way of dealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
So, yeah, I found this to be a really lovely movie.
Mm-hmm.
My only slight disconnect from it was the Augustus Waters character. You know, he seemed written. You know, he seemed like a great character that you would invent for a book and a movie, whereas Hazel Grace was very grounded and very realistic. And, I mean, I bought her, and buoyed by Shailene Woodley's performance, you know, she seemed very real and authentic to me. And there was a certain inauthenticity to Augustus Waters, but I think that's just sort of baked into the pie.
Yeah, I was okay with that because I thought he did feel written, but it was like he was writing himself.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to do a teenage version of Dolly, you know. I mean, he was inventing the person that he wanted to be since he had this limited time here.
Have you ever met anyone like that in real life who seemed to be consciously curating their life as they went?
Yes, yes.
Tell me about them, just briefly.
Jason Patrick, the older brother in The Lost Boys. I interviewed him. It was the most uncomfortable interview I've ever done. He was determined to show you how tough and aggressive and Tony Robbins he was. And he was one of those guys that shook your hand way too hard and said the obscenity that would get us in the most trouble. Every other word, because it was part of him showing what a dynamic, powerful guy who doesn't follow the rules he was, you know. And I mean, he was trying to live this persona out, and you know, you just wanted to just tell him to relax,
just chill out. How much of that was him in his real life doing that, and was here's an actor? He's an actor at a, you know, public
that part,
forum,
no
and he was
idea.
Trying to, you know,
no
act.
Idea.
Yeah, I remember, it reminds me of something that George Segal, the actor, mm-hmm. Said about. He was often on Johnny Carson. We were discussing earlier, and always, you know, played the banjo and cracked wise, and
right.
always was a lot of fun. And people who knew him, you know, he was really a much more serious guy who was concerned about important things, and said like, "Well, how do you do that?" He says, "I just go on there and play the character of an actor who likes to have fun and promote his movie."
Charles Grodin's another guy who, you know, he has a persona for TV. You know, for talk shows on television, and he goes into that persona, you know, and he's a picky, fussy, highly irritable man, and that's how he builds comedy out of his talk show appearances.
Yeah. So, Fault in the Stars, I thought it was a very good, not great, but very good adaptation.
Yeah, they came very close to the just too much level during the Anne Frank thing, but by that point, I was just going with them wherever they went. And I mean, I noted that, whoa, this is landed on thick right now. But again, I was with them, you know. I was with them, and I didn't feel like picking at the film.
Yeah. So are we doing the little sound effects to say how we felt about it, or are we just going to skip that?
I don't know. Do you want to do that?
We can just
I'll be honest. Let's just skip that.
Let's just skip that.
Okay, that's a great idea.
But you got, you know, worth
we're certainly recommending it.
I think
we're both certainly recommending it.
Definitely.
You know, if you heard the plot description, you went ew, well then don't go.
Strong recommendation, I would definitely say. And I should just mention because of my own perviness, I thought Laura Dern was really nice in this, in a fairly small but nice mm-hmm. role.
Yeah.
And boy, she's just aging so lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Something I encounter as I get older is that I look at these young actresses like Jennifer Lawrence or Shailene Woodley or so forth, and I can objectively say, yes, that is a beautiful human being, a beautiful girl, but I'm not attracted to that. They just look like girls to me, just like children.
Now, the boy, Al Gore, what's his name?
Nat Wolff?
No.
Oh, see, I looked it up so I could pronounce it correctly, and now it's fled. It's like Angus Elgort.
Okay. Yeah, when I was watching him, there were a couple points where I thought, if I was that age, I wish he would take me to the prom. You know, it wasn't a thing where now, you know, old creepy me that wouldn't want, but if I was that age, it would be the best thing in the world to have that guy take me to prom.
Okay. Well, I don't know if anybody's asking for Tom Cruise to take them to the prom these days. He does. He cannot seem to buy any good press lately. Ever since the couch jumping thing on Oprah, I don't know what's going on with him. I was discussing this on social media with Nick Rogers from the Film Yap and a few others about all this negativity that seems to be going towards Tom Cruise is translating into diminished reception to his movies, both critically and box office.
Well, it's part of the social media phenomena. I mean, in that the whole couch thing wouldn't have been anything. It would have been a joke or two on late night TV, and that would have been it. But with social media, everyone can egg everyone else on.
Yeah,
and it's fun to make Tom Cruise jokes, and it's easy to do.
I guess I'm just bothered. I mean, if it's about the movies, I wouldn't mind a little extra sauce about his personal life. I mean, to me, that's fair game. You know, if you're a big star, that's part of it. But the fact that it seems to be all about, you know, his personality, his marriages, and his religion, and not about the movies themselves bothers me. Because, I mean, I think if you look at the last decade or so of his career, look at the movies he's made, I think it's as good a 10 years as any run he's had going back to, you know, to the early 1980s. I mean, he did some good stuff in the 1980s, but also some real clunkers.
Yeah.
I mean, he said one or two clunkers lately, but I mean, probably the worst movie he's made lately, I think, was probably maybe Valhalla. Or not Valhalla. Was that the right term? The Valkyrie.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, no terrible movies, but some good ones and one or two, I think, great ones. So it bothers me that that's what the focus is on.
Yeah, and this one is just, I got an email from someone who said, they saw my review and they said, is this one of the movies like he's made for the last few years where it's almost every scene is Tom Cruise? And I thought it was, it is. All Tom all the time, you know, but it's a perfectly serviceable movie.
Science fiction film, Edge of Tomorrow. So, the setup here is, and it is vaguely similar to the movie he made last year called Oblivion, which I thought was much better. But this was, so he's a normal guy. There's, you know, Earth is being invaded by aliens. This is a familiar theme we've seen in lots of science fiction movies. There's lots of things in this movie you've seen in other sci-fi movies. There's hardware and armor, exoskeletons, and time travel, and doubts about what if everything you've seen is actually true. But I think they sort of took, you know, spare parts from other movies and made a nice little vehicle here. So he's an everyday guy sent into this battle against the alien buggos. He has absolutely no combat training whatsoever. He's a PR guy. We know how terrible.
And a coward.
And so he goes out there and he's outfitted with his own little outfit and gun. And so he does exactly what someone would do in that situation, which is that he dies almost immediately.
Right.
Which I love because, you know, you see these movies where, you know, the unexpert goes out and accomplishes great thing. No, that's not how it happens in real life. You do not go out and do great things immediately. Reminds me of a recurring nightmare I have, which is, you know, I'm a big NBA fan. I love professional hoops. And the nightmare is that I wake, you know, I find myself on an NBA court during the middle of a game as a member of a team playing, which, you know, normally is like someone's fantasy, except I'm not like young and 7 feet tall and can jump and shoot. I'm actually me in this size and this body and this age, and I'm horrible. But for some reason, they won't, you know, call my number and get me out of there. And I'm screwing things up and shooting air balls. And yeah, that's not the way things happen in this movie, though.
No.
So he dies, but he wakes up and it's the morning before the battle and the day has reset. And he has a chance to do it all over again. And don't worry about the specifics and the metaphysics of how this happens. It just happens. It's
sci-fi war movie Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day meets Starship Troopers. That's what it really, the bugs and the armor looks a lot like Starship Troopers.
And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing right now. I mean, it appears, at least based on the box office from last night, that the audience seems to be soundly rejecting this film. Now, it may be a little change over the weekend.
It's getting great reviews.
Getting great
over
reviews.
Over 90% on the tomato meter last I saw.
Yeah, but we just described it as Groundhog Day meets Starship Troopers. And how enticing is that? You know, a repetitious film that doesn't have Bill Murray.
Well, but how repetitious was Groundhog Day?
But that had Bill Murray and a script that was just amazing.
Yeah. So he gets a little further on his second day, a little further on his third day, and so forth. Hooks up with a terrific female warrior character played by Emily Blunt. And they end up sort of having their own little partnership in this never-ending battle that resets every day. And so
the same thing happened to her earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wasn't going to give that away, but
oh,
Mr. Spoiler over here.
Oh, God. Well, I'm sorry.
So why don't we take a little listen to Edge of Tomorrow?
Want to know what happens at the end?
I'm going to tell you a story. At first, it's going to sound ridiculous. But the longer I talk...
We have to find the keys.
The more rational it's going to appear.
I can't believe you found coffee.
Sugar, right?
Yeah.
Hold on. Three. You like three.
How many times have we been here? How many times?
For me, it's been an eternity. The invasion will fail. We lose everything. I die within 5 minutes of landing on that beach, along with every other soldier.
How did you do that?
Come on!
Come find me when you wake up!
You do know what's happening to me.
What happened to you happened to me. You hijacked their power.
How do I control it?
You have to die. Every day. Keep coming here and I'll train you. Again, again. Your leg's broken.
No, I'm good.
Then you better start over.
Oh, come on. I'm not a soldier.
Of course you're not. You're a weapon. They want to conquer the rest of the world. Unless you change the outcome.
We are not equipped for what's out there.
How many times have we been here? What are you not telling me?
It's gonna be dark in a few hours.
And curl up by the fire and open a bottle of wine. We should just reset.
Whoa!
I agree. This would probably actually make a great video game. Where it's like, you know, they have hundreds of different possibilities that things could play out, and you have to try all of them. And, you know, there's multiple solutions. It's not like keep trying it until you find the one answer. It's like create your own answer that works.
And because they have the multiple chances, you get to see things you would never see in a film. Like Chris described earlier, one of them. There's another one where a character decides to, while everyone else is distracted, to roll beneath the car and make his getaway. And you know how that works in movies, and you know how that would probably work in real life. We get to see what would happen in real life the first time.
Which is just wonderful.
It's perfect. It's perfect. It's so refreshing.
Surprising amount of humor in this movie, directed by Doug Liman, who did the original, the first and best Bourne movie.
Identity.
Which I love because he knew how to shoot action scenes, because you can see the entirety of Jason Bourne's body, and you can see him fighting guys and knowing exactly what he's doing and how he's leveraging his body and his skills. And then it became, you know, all the fights in the rest of the movies were all, you know, foot, hand, butt, foot, you know, you don't know what's going on. And I thought the action scenes were pretty crisp here. I mean, there's a lot of CGI, as you might expect, but I thought they, you know, you kept that spatial sense of integrity.
Yeah, midway through the film, he tried to kind of goose the action, and I thought, and I got lost for a while.
Yeah.
But then it fell back into place, and I was with him for the rest of it. You know, but the thing is, it's like, for people that don't go to movies very often, there's Godzilla. And everybody I know is going to see Godzilla, you know, that the people that don't go to movies very often, because it's Godzilla. You know, for everybody else, there's X-Men. You know, then for the younger people, particularly the female younger people, we have Fault in the Star, our Stars, which is going to be the number one movie this weekend. Absolutely no question.
Wow.
Absolutely no question.
And unfortunately, they're going to interpret that as Tom Cruise's career as continues to decline rather than just this was a huge young adult phenomenon.
Yeah, they just underestimated the popularity of that book.
Oh, and we need to discuss Koosh Balls. Because somehow the aliens are like these vaguely metallic, tendrily things. It's roughly ball-shaped, and they have these long tendrils, tentacles, and they burrow through the earth. And they're steely black and looking very cool. They're indistinct. You know, they don't really seem to necessarily have a real face and head and body and feet. And so in a bit of psychic convergence, which is this is not the first time this has happened, actually.
No.
Ed and I both wrote reviews in which we prominently discussed how the aliens looked like Koosh balls.
And, I mean, we didn't discuss this after the film.
No.
You know, I didn't discuss this with anyone. I just had that in my head. I looked up the spelling to confirm the spelling. And Chris was doing the same thing.
Yeah. Probably somewhere, you know, two people hit the same Wikipedia page at the exact second in time. I don't know what that is, but... Well, I enjoyed the movie. Like I said, I mean, for me, it is a... not very original story. It's kind of like spare parts from other science fiction movies. But I thought, you know, what they put together with it was fun and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
Emily Blunt is that. She co-stars.
Yeah, I think we mentioned her. Okay. She plays the Angel of Verdun, the badass warrior. And she's very good in it. And there's a few other minor characters. Bill Paxton is in it.
I didn't recognize him until I saw the names in the credits and someone told me what role he played. I didn't recognize him at all.
And who's the Irish actor, the big red-headed guy?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. But you'll recognize him when you see him. He's the guy who dies at the end of In Bruges, which I'm sorry.
Oh, Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I just ruined In Bruges for you. I think we both, I'm definitely recommending the movie.
Oh, yeah.
All right, a couple other movies out that we have not seen.
I should have.
Words and Pictures, which is sort of a romantic drama starring Owen Wilson and Juliette Binoche. Unfortunately, they had this screening actually on the same night as Edge of Tomorrow, so neither Ed or I got to see it. We do have a review of it up at the Film Yap by Ben Johnson. He gives it 3.5 out of 5 yaps. And I'll just read you a quick thing from what he has to say. Despite the efforts of the lead actors, Words and Pictures gets bogged down by a pedestrian screenplay. The dialogue is decent and helped tremendously by the nuanced chemistry between Owen and Binoche. The plot is familiar. Strong-willed English teacher meets strong-willed art teacher. Sparks fly, tensions ensue, finally brewing into a flirtatious tug of war over which is more meaningful, words or pictures. So... go check out Words and Pictures if you're into that. I would have actually enjoyed it. Sounded, you know, and that's a terrific duo of actors.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to have seen it. So unfortunately, they kind of messed us up on that. Was that the one you had the screener over, or was it For No Good Reason?
For No Good Reason. Ralph Steadman, the guy, the artist, the British artist whose illustrations are, I think, most associated with Hunter Thompson articles and books.
It was kind of a running mate, or, you know, wingman, whatever you want to call it, of Hunter Thompson.
It's a documentary about him.
And Johnny Depp, who, of course, you know, is a huge Hunter Thompson fan slash friend slash actor portraying him, and I think also knew Ralph through that mm-hmm. association, is there as kind of the, I mean, he's not just the narrator. He's actually physically present in interviewing Ralph.
Right.
And is essentially part of the story of making the documentary. So I don't know what... the MC? I mean, what do you call him in that situation?
I'm not sure. Running mate? Yeah, I'm not really sure. But it, the reviews are good for it, solid reviews. I was sent a screener for it, as it turns out, about a month ago, and they sent it so early that I just put it off till it got closer to when the movie was going to premiere, and then didn't realize they even had it until I got a frantic email from the studio representative.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I feel bad. I think I got one, too. I feel bad about that. Believe it or not, people, even film critics can't watch every movie. We're sorry.
Yeah.
All right. I did want to briefly mention some summer movie series we got, because they're all seem to be starting this weekend or very soon. Over at the Indianapolis Museum of Arts, of course, they've got their summer movie nights, which has been going on for how long now?
Oh, it's been years.
It's been years and years. If you've never been, outdoor movies at the old-style Greek amphitheater there, out back of the museum. Usually has some kind of an introduction or speaker. Just a lovely, lovely setting. Great way to see movies, especially on a night like this where it's, you know, not quite as hot. Get there early. Does it usually sell out, or does it always sell out?
Wow.
But so they're starting off their series, and it's whole, you know, goes through August. Breakfast at Tiffany's is the kickoff movie. Obviously the great romantic drama, comedy, adventure with Audrey Hepburn, George Peppard, and a horribly racist portrayal of a Japanese-American by Mickey Rooney.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
They've got a nice mix for the lineup this year. Obviously, go to the IMA's website to get the full lineup. They kind of seem to stagger between more modern movies and then some classics. The Godfather, Raiders of the Lost Ark, American Graffiti. I'm trying to remember some of the others, but it's a nice list this year, a nice grouping. Same thing over at the Landmark Keystone Art Cinema. They are once again kicking off their Midnight Madness series. So go see a movie at midnight or even slightly later. And they've got Back to the Future as the kickoff movie there, starring Michael J. Fox and a guy with just a lovely, lovely name, Christopher Lloyd. So go check out their website for their full lineup. This is true. I'm not sure if I've ever told you this. So you may or may not remember that when I was in high school and then during college summers, I worked in a movie theater.
Right.
Surprise, surprise. So first is, you know, slinging popcorn or sweeping popcorn, but then I became an assistant manager and a projectionist and, you know, did the sign on the marquee. And, you know, there wasn't anything there that I didn't do. And so we would actually close down our theater at, you know, midnight or whatever, drive to the theater out at Pleasure Island at Disney, which was like this great big entertainment complex, and, you know, go to see like a 1 or a 1:15 in the morning movie. And then go drive around until, you know, 5 in the morning, you know, blasting out Queen or REM or whatever we were listening to back then. And then go to bed, get it up, and do it all over again.
Yeah. I wonder if they still have that one place at Pleasure Island where it's New Year's Eve every hour.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. I'm not sure. Imagine.
I'm not. You know, I was just back to home in Orlando. Yes, I'm from Orlando. There are some of us. Not too long ago, and I think they don't even have Pleasure Island anymore. They like built something up around it, and they call it something out like Downtown Disney or something like that. It's the same concept of like, this is where the adults go to like drink and party. It's the more risque Disney area, but they don't have it anymore. All right. Well. And I should also mention Heartland Film Festival is having their summer rewind in a couple of weeks. And that's where they take some of their winning films from last fall's festival, bring them back, replay them in theaters. And they also have a bunch of the filmmakers coming to talk about their movies. So if you missed any of the big movies from Heartland last year, you can have your little rewind now.
And they have a film tonight.
Do they?
Now, this is going to get tricky. It's... From 7 to 9, certainly. It's a 15-minute long film. It's at their office on Virginia Avenue. It's a stop-motion animated film about a woman who longed to be an aviator, a real-life woman who longed to be an aviator, and they're going to show it over and over every 15 minutes throughout the evening, and they're selling drinks and popcorn and candy and stuff, too, and
Wonderful.
Beer.
All right. Well, why don't we take a very short break here, and then we'll be back with the video store. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, and I am not Matthew Soucy. And we're back, and we're not going to play the video store intro just because we don't feel like it, and Matt Soucy's not here to tell us otherwise, so we can.
We're rebels.
We're rebels without a lead-in.
And you ask what we're rebelling against? Our answer is, what do you got?
What do you got? You know, I just watched that movie, The Wild One. Mm-hmm. I've got a... Actually, I think it published last week in the film app. We have the Reeling Backward column looking at old movies. And I was struck by that moment. It's like everyone thinks of it and remembers it as, you know, Marlon Brando making this declarative, in-your-face, like, you know, what are you rebelling against? What do you got? Mm-hmm. And what actually happens is they're in a juke joint with some girls flirting with them, and it's just kind of a throwaway line. It's like not even looking at her. It's just like she's like, you know, like, hey, what are you rebelling? What do you got?
Yeah.
I just find it one of the things I'm continually fascinated about movies is how we perceive them incorrectly.
Well, play it again, Sam.
Play it again, Sam. Play it again, Sam. Never said it. Words never spoken in Casablanca. So we've got the video store talking about what's coming out. Fairly light week. You know, we're now at this point where we're past the Oscar contenders that mm-hmm. came out late last year, early this year, and we're into the movies that legitimately came out in theaters in January or February, which is to say the dregs of the cinematic year. So, but we did have one or two good films in there that made a little bit of noise. One of them was Lone Survivor, mm-hmm. sort of an action drama, directed by, I believe, by Peter Berg, starring Mark Wahlberg and the, what is that actor's name? The young blonde kid, Ben Foster,
right.
Who's just wonderful. If you haven't seen him in The Messenger, go rent that movie right now.
He's a chameleon.
Yeah, he's real terrific. He was in the remake of 310 to Yuma, wasn't he in that?
I believe.
He played kind of the sidekick. Terrific. He's one of those that guys. You know, it's like, yeah. I don't know his name, like I struggled to summon it just now, but he's always in movies and always terrific in them. So why don't we just take a brief listen to Lone Survivor. Setup is based on a true story about a foursome of soldiers in Afghanistan?
I believe.
Who basically had to make a choice between killing some people or giving away their position to the enemy, and they made the former choice and suffered the consequences for it. So here is a little bit of Lone Survivor.
I'm Petty Officer Shane.
Can he sing?
Can you say it?
Mr. Patton, please.
Come on. Been around the world twice. Talked to everyone once. There ain't nothing I can't do. No sky too high, no sea too rough. Learned a lot of lessons in my life. Never shoot a large caliber man with a small caliber bullet. Anything in life worth doing is worth overdoing. Moderation's for cowards. I'm a lover. I'm a fighter. I'm a UDT Navy SEAL diver.
Listen up. Red Wing's a go. Bad guy. Senior Taliban commander.
Shaw killed 20 Marines last week. 20.
Going in with a four-man team. Axelson, myself, Dietz, Marcus. TV. It's a lot more than 10 guys. It's an army. This office compromised.
This is Spartan 01, radio check.
Danny, you radio working? The way I see it, we got two options. One, we let them go, roll the dice.
The second that they run down there, we got 200 on our backs.
Two, we terminate the compromise.
We cannot do that.
I don't care.
I care about you. I care about you. I care about you.
Not killing kids, not feeling it.
This is not a vote. We're gonna cut them loose, and we're going home.
Roger that, sir. Roger.
Yes.
We're fixing to get into a pretty good gunfight. Standing by the wall,
and the guns. There's a storm inside of us. A drive. You push yourself further than anyone could think possible.
You can die for your country, I'm gonna live for mine.
God's looking out for us.
We're good, right? We're solid. We can be heroes.
Heroes. You are never out of the fight. Just for one day.
Okay. And so just a little bit of information here. Even though Matthew Soucy is not here on the show, he's here in spirit because he sent me something that he wanted me to talk about on air, which was that he was over at a store where they had a display of Lone Survivor being, you know, being out now on Blu-ray and DVD. And it said it was paired with, you know, people like inspired retailers will say, oh, well, that's kind of like this movie. I'll put that movie together. So maybe I'll move some copies of this other older movie, too. So they called it Inspiring Military Films. And they put it together with Green Zone and Jarhead, which, if you've seen them, are, you know, pretty biting indictments of Iraq and military culture and all that kind of stuff. So pretty funny that people are so clueless. And you've got a story about Lone Survivor.
I saw a feature about the real guy that the wrote the book and that the, you know, Mark Wahlberg plays. They asked him about the authenticity of the film, and he said the scene where they debated what to do with whether to turn the goat herders over or to let them go, or take them prisoner or let them go. He said that was the only thing that was untrue. In fact, they immediately let him go, and that was there was no debate. He said, aside from that, everything that you saw on screen is what happened.
Yeah.
I thought that was great for change, you know.
And I thought this was this is a movie that it's sort of like, it reminds me very much of Black Hawk Down from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's one of those very much you are there type of movies. It's putting you in the place of the soldiers. There's chaos. There's firing all around. People are injured. You know, they literally throw themselves off of cliffs because that's better than staying where they are. Right. And are dragging their broken bodies along while firing at the enemy. Really engaging movie. You know, well played part as usual by Ben Foster and Mark Wahlberg. You know, I'm not sure if it's one of those movies that really kind of has something to say or stays with you. It's sort of like it starts out being sort of the dramatic part, and then it essentially becomes an action film. But I thought an effective one.
I did too.
Okay. An ineffective action film would be RoboCop. Now, of course, I'll tell you my story. We love to tell stories because that's what we do about RoboCop. So 1987, I'm a teenager working at a movie theater. And one of the things we had to do from time to time was like those displays that you see in a movie theater. It's like a 3D thing, like cardboard, and maybe even has like lights. And it's like, you know, like Godzilla would be like a, you know, 8-9 foot tall Godzilla that you can walk past with your popcorn. Was to set those things up. So we get this one for a movie called RoboCop. And we're setting this thing up, and we thought it was just the funniest thing on the planet Earth. It's like, you know, he's RoboCop. And, you know, that little... And the trailer didn't really show too much beyond the herky-jerky walk and the strange way that he talked. So for weeks, me and my fellow ushers at the movie theater were walking around imitating RoboCop, but in a mocking way. And then we saw the movie, and wow. I mean, that was just incredibly strange, wonderful, violent, you know, fascist movie, but in a good way. Fascist in a good way. If there's a good way to be fascist, that was it.
Paul Verhoeven doing good.
Yeah, doing good. So now they've remade it. I don't know why. The old movie is not that old. The special effects and the violence still stand up very well.
And it's distinct.
It's distinct.
There's no other movie like that, RoboCop.
And you know what? Not even RoboCop 2.
No.
And the thing is, for fans who are actual fans of the movie, like, I'm a huge fan. Like, I saw it when I was entirely too young, and it was actually kind of traumatic to see RoboCop.
Uh-huh.
They actually released the uncut version on Blu-ray.
Yeah. And it's horrifying.
And the thing is, because originally they had to send this movie back to the MPAA, like, 6 or 7 times.
Oh,
there was no
NC-17. That.
They were going to give RoboCop an X rating based on the violence.
Oh, yeah.
I have to see the uncut version.
If you've never seen the uncut version, it is, I mean, so the scene where, like, Alex Murphy gets gunned down to death, yeah, they snipped the heck out of that thing.
Wow.
And the uncut version, I mean, I speak this as a, you know, a lifelong horror film aficionado. It's hard to watch.
Wow.
It's really that violent.
I gotta see this.
So they decided to remake RoboCop, and of course they watered it down. They had to make it PG-13 rated because they feel like they're not going to get their market demo if they did it. So
do you realize there are young people that when they think of RoboCop, Fright Night, or Total Recall.
They think of the
two Colin Farrell movies and the one you're talking about now.
Those poor, sad. Those poor millennials.
Oh.
You know, Joel, I can't remember his name, McKinnon, playing Alex Murphy. You know, some interesting things going on there. Strangely, the one that thought I fell asleep with Samuel L. Jackson as a demagogic Bill Riley type of TV figure. Uh-huh. It didn't seem to go anywhere. Michael Keaton as sort of an evil corporate version of Steve Jobs. And I don't know. It just didn't add up to anything. And the violence, it's like a video game because it's PG rated 13. There's not really a whole lot of blood or suffering or torture. It's just, you know, guys to mow them down and. Why? I guess I'm feeling. I don't mind you remaking one of the seminal films of my youth, but if you're going to do it, don't be timid about it.
Right, right.
A few other movies coming out on video this week. We'll mention Son of God. They actually did quite a bit of new trend now is films financed by and about biblical groups or stories.
Did you know Disney is working on The Princess Daughter of God?
But this movie did quite well at the box office and is now out on video. Breaking Bad, the complete series.
Yes!
Pretty awesome. Although I do have to ask now, I mean, since the whole thing is available on any number of streaming services, why would you just not do that? Why would you shell out $50 or $60 for the DVD when you can just stream
it? I'm guessing Breaking Bad, not the box set. You know, I just watch it on Netflix.
The hoot was for Breaking Bad, not for DVDs.
Great show. Great show.
I don't know if anybody have watched the ESPN's 30 for 30 series of documentaries of really ambitious sports documentaries that they've been running over the last year. Randy, you know, and some of them are only 30 minutes long. Some of them are up to 2 hours. I've watched quite a few of them, and a lot of them are really terrific. Probably the one that I thought was most fascinating was about Steve Bartman. Do you remember him? He was the guy at that
Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, the baseball game who caught a catchable thing became a home run because it was at a home game, so he essentially screwed his home team.
He instantly became a villain.
And essentially his life was over because of that and what happened to him. And they do a really fascinating story, even though, like everyone else, he has refused to talk to the media ever since. There's one about Reggie Miller, which is really good for Pacers fans, so go check out ESPN 30 for 30. They now have the entire first season out on video.
Does the Reggie Miller story have any twists that we wouldn't know?
Probably not. Being here, Indianapolis, and you know Pacers, and kind of being steeped in that culture and mythology, there's not anything too much new, but it is fun to see like people looking back on there. My memory is they did not get Spike Lee on camera to talk about the going back and forth with him and Reggie Miller, which would have been fun.
That period where we had Reggie Miller and Peyton Manning at the same time, it was like, this little town in the middle of nowhere, we've got Reggie Miller and Peyton Manning, and they're thriving, and this is incredible.
Yeah, and it was that year before the brawl, it was that 2004, where really people really thought it was possible we could win both championships in the same year. Finally, Alexander, The Ultimate Cut. Does anyone remember the not at all good Oliver Stone movie about Alexander the Great?
This is another one? Another version of it?
Yeah. It's like he doesn't want us to believe that the movie sucks, so he just keeps putting out he or producers or somebody with rights to the movie keeps putting out new versions of this.
Well, he released it, then he released it and took all the gay stuff out.
Yeah.
And then that tanked, and then he released it with more gay stuff.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if this is like an in-between amount of gay stuff or yet more gay stuff or, but if you wanted to see the ultimate cut of that, there it is.
No, thank you.
And we should also mention something that's just come down that's kind of interesting if you're a film buff and into film things is, you know, occasionally movies will get pushed back. And what that means is, you know, they've announced a release date for the movie and then at some point, you know, either they realize they're not going to finish the movie or they realize it's coming out against another movie that's going to be very big and won't do well or it's not testing well and they want to reshoot some scenes and re-edit it and they'll push it back. And this happens pretty frequently in the industry, but it usually happens, you know, 4, 5, 6 months out.
Yeah.
You know, so like in September, they'll say, okay, that movie that's going to open on Christmas Day is now going to open. But Jupiter Rising, which is a
Jupiter Ascending,
which was one of the big, fairly big, you know, probably not in the top five, but certainly in the second five of action spectacle tent poles for the summer, which was, I believe, supposed to come out July.
Somewhere mid-July.
18th, I want to say.
Channing Tatum and...
Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
And we just found out, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that it's being pushed back until the end, until next year.
It's made by the siblings that made The Matrix.
The Wachowski brothers.
Yeah.
Or, now, excuse me, the Wachowski siblings.
Yeah. And it just... they say the official word is that it's because of the special effects. Now, here's what I want you to consider. It opens in less than a month. It was scheduled to open in less than a month. Do you really think those guys, or the siblings, were that far away from finishing the special effects that they said, we just can't make the deadline?
Yeah.
Or do you think they did some test screenings and went, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Let's put it, and there's the other thing. They didn't bump it to the holiday movie season. They bumped it to February.
Yeah, nobody bumps anything to February because things are going peachy.
No.
And this is the second time this has happened to Channing Tatum. He's one of the stars of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because that last G.I. Joe movie that he was he was, for whatever reason, it was supposed to be a summer movie a couple years ago, and then they bumped it back to spring, and it was something sort of like this. It was maybe about a month and a half out. And they, I think, but I mean, the rumor was, you know, after Magic Mike, he had become a bigger star than they had envisioned.
Right.
And spoiler alert, he's killed in the first, like, maybe quarter of the movie. And, you know, everyone's saying, well, they're going to try to rewrite it to where he comes back in the middle of the movie. He's maybe one of the characters that doesn't get killed. That's not what happened, but it was just a real strange that when you mentioned the Channing Tatum. I was like, this is kind of a thing for him.
Well, people, that happens all the time where people don't realize the long, long process of making a movie is how that they might, you know, shoot a movie and it doesn't come out for years later. True story about the movie Days of Heaven, which I have an article about up at the Film Yep as we speak. Terrence Malick spent so long editing the film that after they had finished production, during production, another director named Richard Brooks asked to see some of the dailies so he could assess if he should cast Richard Gere in his own movie, The Postman Rings Twice, which he did. So that movie then went into finished the casting, went into pre-production, shot the film, went into post-production editing, and was released into theaters, all while Terrence Malick still dallied editing Days of Heaven.
Wow.
That's how long it can go. But anyway, and a line about Jupiter Ascending. Channing Tatum has pointy ears and glittery stuff. And a friend of mine said that he looks like Channing Tatum ate Legolas from The Lord of the Rings, which is, I thought was very funny. That was from my friend Roger Moore, who is also a film critic. Yes, not only am I a film critic with the name of a famous actor, I have a friend who's an even more famous film critic who has the same name as an even more famous actor. So that's Roger where I'm from. Talking about the part of the show where we call I'm not sure what Matthew refers to it as, but those who have passed, who have some presence in the film industry. I call it Dead People We Like. So it's kind of a light week on Dead People Like, which is kind of a funny thing. On the one hand, I'm glad that Dead People We Like, not a lot of them died this week, because it's nice for them not to die and still be with us. On the other hand, it gives us a little bit less to talk about. So we'll just go through the list really quickly. Probably the biggest name this week, believe it or not, is Ann B. Davis, who played the maid on The Brady Bunch. What was her name? Alice.
And then before that, she was Schultzy on the Bob Cummings Show.
Okay.
Now, here's the interesting, my little story that I just learned about the other day. Iron Man, Pepper Potts in the Iron Man comic book, was based on Ann B. Davis's Schultzy character from the Bob Cummings Show. If you look at the drawings from back then, the character looked like her. But the bosses, after four issues of the comic, said, change her and make her look more glamorous. And they changed to what eventually became the Gwyneth Paltrow role.
Wow, that's great. She did have mostly known for television, won two Emmy Awards, but did make a few movies back in the day. All Hands on Deck, Pepe, Lover Came Back, and was also had a nice role in Naked Gun 33 and a Third. Few other people that have died. Not too many big names. Karl-Heinz Hackl, Austrian actor best known from Sophie's Choice. We've got Joseph Olita, Kenyan actor from Mississippi Malsala. Anjan Das, famous Indian filmmaker. And Chester Nas, not a film guy, but it was the last of the Navajo Code Talkers. And obviously they made a movie or two about that.
Right.
All right. Well, Ed, thanks for being on the show.
It was a pleasure.
And we'll see you next time. It may not be me. It will be Matthew Soucy coming back to see you.
You can read our reviews of Fault in the Stars and Our Stars and the Tom Cruise movie at Chris's. Is it the Film Yap? I'm at Nuvo.net.
You've been listening to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI, HU to the Point. And we out of here.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.